This is David Klein recording for the Southern Oral History Program's Long Civil Rights Movement Project, and I'm here in Louisville. It is June the 9th, 2006, with Mr. Sherman Biddix. And if you could just sort of say hello and introduce yourself for the tape.
Hello, my name is Sherman Biddix. I reside at 3718 Southern Avenue in the Louisville, Kentucky, the villages of Park Duval.
And you, can you tell me about where you were born and raised?
I was born in the old General Hospital here in Jefferson County. Oh. However, I was raised on a farm about 145 miles southwest of here, in southwestern Kentucky, by my grandparents.
Okay.
Up until the age of, I stayed down there until I was 14 years old, and then I moved back here with my father. My father lived here, and mm-hmm. I came but returned here to finish high school.
And which high school did you?
Male high school.
Oh, you came through Male.
Yes.
Right. And then, and after high school?
After high school, I briefly moved to Chicago with a relative where I went to work, got a job in the steel mills, and I worked about a year. And then the draft came along, and I mm-hmm. entered the military. And from there, I ended up in Vietnam, and did my 13-month tour and finished my military obligations. And then I returned after the military. I lived in Detroit for a couple of years, and then Chicago, and then I returned to Kentucky, mm-hmm. Here in Louisville, where I now reside.
Mm-hmm. What branch of the service?
In the Army.
You were in the Army?
Yes.
Okay. And so eventually returned to Kentucky?
Yes.
And what kind of work did you?
When I initially returned out of the military, I worked for the government affiliate, the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Oh, yeah.
Paradise Steam Plant. Yeah. I was a material controller down there for years until the first recession hit in the early 80s, and they laid off numerous individuals. And I had a choice of, I was living in the area that I was raised in southwestern Kentucky, down in Muhlenberg County, and the only work at that particular time of any consequence was working in the coal mines or working at TVA, and so I didn't want to work in the coal mines at that time. My grandfather had worked in the coal mines for 30 years, but unlike him, I didn't desire that type of work, and mm-hmm. so I returned to Louisville to seek employment, and I've been here ever since.
Mm-hmm. In Louisville,
I initially started out doing contract work with the utility companies, where we were protecting underground infrastructure for all five utilities here in Louisville, up until last year, when the company that I worked for was sold to another company, and I chose not to relocate, and so now I do what is called containment work for the automotive industry on contractual basis.
Mm-hmm. And you now live at the villages at Park Duval, but can you tell me about where you lived before you moved here and how that came about?
Okay, I've lived in primarily the west end of Louisville mm-hmm. For the majority of the time that I've been here in Louisville. I live River Park, which is 30th and River Park, which is West Louisville. And for approximately 10 years, I lived out in West Butchel, which is out in the southeast end of town, in and around the General Electric plant out there. And then after as the project of Park Duval started to build down here, I decided to move back to the West End with the incentives that they offered, and plus the majority of my family lived here in the West End. And I thought it would be a good thing the opportunity to have a new home in a new subdivision, and to be, I spent most of my time down here anyway, so I said mm-hmm. I moved back to the West End. Mm-hmm. So that's how, in the year 2000, we purchased down here, mm-hmm. been here ever since.
Mm-hmm. Now, did it feel like a risk that you were taking, or an experiment to see how this area would work?
Somewhat, yes. Yeah. I wouldn't say a risk per se, because I was, unlike a lot of the individuals who flee from the West End for whatever reason, because of what the stereotyping that goes on down here, and plus there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of violence that went on down here that people are afraid of. But you know, that was not an issue with me, because I lived in this neighborhood, so I felt like mm-hmm. you know, I was comfortable living here. I wasn't uncomfortable living here, let's put it that way. And the risks involved, the experiment part, I would say, would be the challenge of being involved in a brand new subdivision within the older city, and to see if the challenge to maintain mm-hmm. the subdivision. I think that was the challenge. I think that was the experiment.
Right. And how has that been, meeting that challenge and being part of this new neighborhood association?
It has been a challenge. It remains a challenge. I feel very strongly, and listening to some of my neighbors talk, I think the knowledge of individuals who have never owned property before, as they become property owners, they don't understand the responsibilities. Let's say we have a CCNRs, which is codes and restrictions. It's CCNR. I can't think of the name. Codes. Anyway, it's what you're supposed to do within a community. All right. It's when you purchase homes, you're given a pamphlet of the things that you can and cannot, or you can and should not do within your own community, such as not leaving your garbage cans sitting out at the curb, your setbacks, or different restrictions. All right, a lot of people don't adhere to that, you know, and what as a community, as being part of the community association, what we try to do is send out friendly reminders or flyers of reminding people how to maintain their property value, how to keep their house up, so that the community stays on a proper track to not devalue our property, et cetera, et cetera. And that in itself is a challenge that, you know, we're constantly facing, to teach people how to take care of their property.
Right.
That's one of the biggest challenges.
Because you have to do it in such a way that you don't insult people or cause, you know, create anger or friction.
Right.
And what you're really trying to do is build a community here.
Right. Right. Very much so. That is true.
And has that happened? Has that begun to happen?
To some extent, yes, I would have to say. You know, that we've come a long ways, but we've got a long way to go. Mm-hmm. We've come a long ways, but we've got a long ways to go. As I on my daily movement, as I venture in and out of the subdivision to whatever I may have to do or not, as I'm moving about, I'm constantly observing individual's property. I mean, I have a daily routine that when I walk, I will walk through the community and observe other people's property and to see what condition, just if they mow their grass on a regular basis, or if they're doing just the basic upkeep of their properties. And when I see something that stands out, let's say, you know, any one individual or individuals that are lagging in certain areas of maintaining their property, then what we as an association will bring up the issues of the need to send out reminders on an annual, on a routine basis of property upkeep, what people have to do in the wintertime, what you have to do in the summertime. And hopefully, like you said before, that, you know, we don't offend people. But, you know, that's a very delicate balance that we try to maintain, like you're saying. Right. It's an ongoing effort.
Right. Now, are there your neighborhood association, is it made up just of private homeowners or also renters?
Yes, we have renters and we have individuals from the surrounding community, the older community.
Oh, they're involved as well.
Yes,
okay.
You know, like we have Colonial Homes, which is the area that is at 34th and Southern. As you turned in on your left-hand side, those are older units. Mm-hmm. They are owned, even though it's like a condos. Mm-hmm. They are individually owned. Well, they have been here for years, mm-hmm. long before, even when Southwick and Carter Homes was here, Colonial Homes was there.
Okay.
And we have individuals from there. We have individuals from the Algonquin Association, which is adjacent to, which is across Algonquin, which is adjacent to Park Duval. And then Park Duval community itself, which has been here for years. You know, the Villages of Park Duval is the development.
Right.
Right. But the Park Duval community, you know, we have individuals from there also.
Mm-hmm.
The older community, shall we say.
Right. And has it felt like there are gaps to bridge between this new development and the older community?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It is the one major gap that we feel like that we've seen is that there seems to be some not animosity is a strong word, maybe envious of from the older community and the new community, mm. where the some of the individuals, some of the things that have been said have indicate that the people over here, because of the value of the homes in the villages is much higher than the value of the homes in the older communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get that, well, you know, they think they're better than us, or, you know, and then,
right.
And then there was no unity as far as any type of neighborhood association out in the older community. So other than the older property owners, it's been difficult to get the younger, even renters out in the older community to participate in the community, mm-hmm. association. You know, some of the older property owners, they participate, and they're not on a regular basis. You know, our core group of individuals basically is made up of older property owners, and primarily those individuals, the majority of them come from the villages here.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, with sporadic individuals in the older community,
mm-hmm.
and they don't participate on a regular basis. They participate, you know, sometimes.
Right, right. In the villages of Park Duval, what's the racial makeup in this area? Is it still primarily African American?
Yes, predominantly, yeah. It is African American. We do have, you know, Caucasians, and there's I know of a couple of Hispanic families that I'm aware of to date that are property owners, but like I say, predominantly African American.
Yeah. And this might seem like a strange question, but where do you do your shopping? Is there, and is that a sore point? Because there's not a supermarket right around here, is there?
No, not here in this general area. You have a choice of 28th and Broadway, where there's a major Kroger's,
right,
which
right.
is about,
that's not too far,
about
right.
a mile and a half, 2 miles away.
Okay.
Or we go to major major shopping areas. By us being near the expressway, we're about 15 minutes away from major shopping centers, Walmarts or Sam's Superstores or Target or whatnot, mm-hmm. over in Southern Indiana.
Okay.
You know, we can go Southern Indiana, or we can head out Dixie Highway, which is approximately about 5.5 to 7 miles. We go out Dixie Highway where there's major shopping out there, mm-hmm. Myers, Value City, you know, Kroger's, whomever.
Right.
So within less than 15 minutes away, we have major areas, mm-hmm. to go shopping. But like I say, not within our own neighborhood, no, we don't have them here
right.
yet.
Right.
There have been talks and negotiations with different, with major merchandisers. One of the obstacles that we encountered when the application was sent forth for the Hope 6 grant for this development, I call them the founding fathers, or the city leaders and the individuals who was involved, one of the stipulations that they put into this application process was that we would have no alcohol, no commercial outlets that dealt in alcohol. Because at one time over on Wilson Avenue, it was a congested area with a lot of nightclubs and business establishments that sold alcohol, and it was felt that because of so many places that sold alcohol, that this was detrimental to community. So they put a stipulation in that application process that no new facility would serve alcohol or be allowed to serve alcohol. It'd be restricted from it. So when the approach was made, and it's my understanding now, because this is secondhand information that we're getting from the city fathers, the housing authority, et cetera, that Kroger's, for instance, did not want to come into an area where they couldn't sell beer, right. Or you know, so they said they wouldn't do that. You know, so,
interesting.
You know, so this is secondhand information that we're getting. So this was one of the factors which that did not allow us to attract a major retail to anchor a business district within here. So, you know, it's my understanding now that there has been some relaxation of these. Now, how they went about that, I don't know, because, like I say, I haven't seen anything in writing. This is just what we've been told. And then, to my knowledge, that I know that our current city council person, Mr. Leonard Watkins, unfortunately, he lost his bid for reelection. His term is up, but anyway, during his term, he had kept us informed of the negotiation process to negotiate with a major retailer to come into this area, and they were talking with Walmart about a neighborhood store, which is a smaller store than a major, but that did not come to anything, and then they were talking to Aldi's, which is a discount supermarket. So, but to date, we don't have any business in this area yet, you know, but like I say, that's on our wish list. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because both in terms of creating a community and in terms of property values, I would think that would be something that might be a goal.
Years ago, we were the 28th and Dumanil area. At that intersection was the main shopping area within around in this area. You had all types of stores. Excuse me. This was before the riots, and you know, the area got destroyed, so businesses never did come back to that area. We do have a supermarket over there, a discount supermarket over there. It's part of a chain of about three markets that are around through Louisville called the meat stores, they call them. And that's one of the major, that's the closest major grocery store that's here, other than Kroger's. Kroger's is further away, you know, than the meat store is. But I don't think, just the people within the neighborhood, they travel to the meat store. Let's put it that way.
Right. Now, before you got involved in this neighborhood association, over the years previous, had you been involved in your own community or in various organizations?
Not to this capacity, no.
Yeah.
No, I in the form. Previous communities that I lived in, when I lived out in Butchel, I would attend a neighborhood association meeting every now and then. You know, and if there was something in the community that was needed to be done and they needed volunteers and my work would permit it, you know, I may have got involved. We had a neighborhood cleanup or something of that nature, I got involved. But in this capacity, no.
Right. No. And you owned your own home in these other neighborhoods as well?
Yes.
Right. And let's sort of shift gears over to the Rubbertown Community Advisory Council, because that is something that you are involved in as well, right? And can you tell me about how you got involved in that?
Actually, I was One, in during a meeting of the neighborhood association, some of the older residents made accusations of how bad some of their ailments were being caused by the proximity of the chemical plants. Mm-hmm. And I am a type of person, I deal in facts. I like good information. So I spoke with a individual, a friend of mine at that time, who I knew that served on a board over there at the River Town Advisory Council. And it just so happened that their term, they were getting ready to resign their position, and they asked me, would I be interested in doing that? And I said, well, yes, of course. And as a neighborhood leader, I felt that if I got my information firsthand, that I could better talk to my constituents in the community.
Right.
You know, and so that is basically how I started to serve on the board of the River Town Advisory Community Council.
Mm-hmm. And what has that experience been like?
It's been a learning experience.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, some of the names of the chemicals that they use, I couldn't pronounce previously, but now I can't, you know, I'm very familiar with that. I am much more knowledgeable of how the process of, let's say, to shelter in place, what type of procedures that the chemical companies themselves have tried to implement to work with the community, to warn the community if they have the problem or emergency or whatnot. All the efforts that the chemical plants take to help to protect the community. And also, I've become very knowledgeable about the amount of pollutants that is released into the air and what type of effects it can have on the individual, and just more knowledgeable basically of what's actually going on, because like I say, I'm getting my information firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I feel more knowledgeable of what's going on by living here. Before I lived here, I just passed through this area. I never paid it any attention. But now that I live here, I don't know if you noticed, when you pulled up outside, we have a rail spur out front.
Yeah.
And the tank cars that are going into the chemical plant are constantly parked there. And you know, that issue has been brought up before. And I personally asked some of the plant managers that we meet with on a monthly basis as to the status of those particular tank cars, and you know, was reassured that no tank cars with a chemical product sets outside of the property, that you know, this is just a rail spur maintained by the rail company, and these tanks are empty, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there's no security on them, so we have some concerns about that. But
mm-hmm.
being reassured by the chemical companies themselves that most of their product is a just-in-time type of process, where they know what's on the way and they make arrangements for us to be received right into the plant and then mm-hmm. offloaded, and that basically this spur out here is utilized by the railroad just to park cars awaiting transport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, and that in itself is a, I guess it's, you know, it's a little easy on the mind to know that you don't have a volatile chemical a loaded tank car with a volatile chemical parked in front of your house. You know,
mm-hmm.
less than what it's about. Less than 1,000 yards away from in front of your front door.
Right, right. You
know, so it's been, you know, the knowledge to know that what's going, you understand the process better, let's
right,
put it that way,
right.
By being involved with the chemical company.
And you feel they're fairly forthcoming and honest with you?
As much as a company can be.
Right, right.
I mean, I understand, you know, I've managed a company, it's, well, not similar to that, but, you know, I've been involved in management, and I know that there's only so much that you can put out, you know, for confidentiality purposes, et cetera, et cetera. I realize that. So, but yes, I feel like they've been forthcoming, and most of their by having knowledge of, let's say, the West Jefferson County Task Force, and then the University of Louisville, by having access to information from them, and then comparing what the company gives you on a routine basis, and just comparing this information, I feel very comfortable that yes, they have been very mm-hmm. forthcoming with, you know, what's going on in their plans.
Right.
As much as they possibly can.
Right. Now, the proximity to the plants and the rail spur, et cetera, do you feel that has or could have an effect on property value at all for you or for the villages in general?
As far as property value appreciating, yes, I feel that it will. Mm. It does. You know, that, like I say, when we contemplated moving down here, that was not in our, we didn't think about it because neither one of us had lived over in this area before.
Mm-hmm.
And we just didn't think about it. But I don't, I don't believe the property would appreciate more if it wasn't here, let's put it that way.
Right.
I feel confident that once we're on a 10-year, we feel that we've got a 10-year plan, and we've been here 6 already. Our goal was to invest down here and then use this as a springboard to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And so we feel like since we've been here, our property has appreciated more than what we paid for it. So, mm-hmm. you know, we won't make a killing or anything like that, you know, but we'll get our money back and then
right.
make a little profit when we
right.
move.
So it's been a steady investment, at least. Or,
yes. But, you know, not as, if the property was in the southeast or the east end, it would appreciate much more than what it has.
Right. And you have other properties rolled over already around here as far as resale?
Yes, there's been a few that have rolled over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say off the top of my head, I'm aware of 2 pieces of property that individuals have sold out, mm-hmm. you know, and moved on.
Mm-hmm.
In my last tour around the community, I don't recall seeing any for sale signs. No, I don't recall we're seeing any of the sales sign.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like there's even some new construction going on.
Well, they are still completing the build out has not completed yet.
Okay.
No, the build out is not complete yet. As a matter of fact, the lots that are there are some adjacent lots across from us right here now that there's no building on them. We have been informed by the community builders, who are the managers of the project out here, that they intend to build townhomes over here across from us. So, you know, I think there's room for about 20 townhomes, and they're still building individual homes about a block away from us to that phase over there, which is the third phase, the 3B, I believe it is. It should be, it's just about complete. They've mm-hmm. got about, I think it's about 10 lots where they're building individual homes on that mm-hmm. they're trying to sell out. And then up in the front, the larger lots on Dr. William Weatherby's Drive, it's not completed either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's still building to be done down here.
So just for my own knowledge, because I'm a little confused on this fact, Community Builders has done both the individual homes and the public housing units?
No, the Community Builders manage the rental units.
Okay.
And they also are the guiding force behind organizing the different organizations within the community.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
The private homeowner lots have been managed by the Louisville Real Estate Development Corporation,
okay.
which works in conjunction with the Community Development Bank.
Okay.
Right. They handle the individual homeowners.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
So this.
So that's who you've primarily dealt with, is those folks, rather than Community Builders.
Oh yeah. Well, the Community Builders I deal with on an organizational basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as the neighborhood association, mm-hmm. the homeowners association, et cetera, et cetera. But the the Community Development Bank and the Louisville Real Estate Development, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how has Community Builders seemed to be a pretty good property manager, in your opinion?
Yes, overall, yes. I've gotten a lot of complaints from the rental individuals about the management of the Community Builders. There was a period where they went through a transitional period of, you know, they've had several different individuals to manage that organization. Excuse me. But, because I don't have any dealings with them from a managed perspective, I can't really, other than what I've heard, you know, it has all been negative about it. But from my own opinion, you know, from what I, far as them working with us and working with the community, the neighborhood association, and trying to help us to with our annual events and different things, you know, they've been very cooperative.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of annual events, can you tell me about those? I know there was just the big reunion weekend down here a couple weeks ago. Or?
Yeah, but that's not a Park Duval per se. Right. Event. That's an event which was organized long, and it came about long before the Park Duval project, the development came about. Mm-hmm. That's the Southwick Carter Home Day, right. And it's been in existence for years. The Park Duval, we have an annual event. Well, August the 5th, we have our annual family festival. Which is a one-day event that has come about since the Neighborhood Association has been in existence. We have an annual Christmas party for the community and surrounding communities, and we have an annual jazz festival.
Oh, so you do a lot.
In September, yeah. You know, it is basically to create a positive environment for the family-oriented, a family-oriented event. That's what that has been our main focus, and it's growing each year. The participation grows more and more. In the past, it hasn't been highly advertised outside of the community, but this year we're moving to a format where we will be advertising outside the community. We'll be bringing in vendors. We'll be bringing in carnival for the children and entertainment, whatnot. We're going to incorporate a talent show and just doing different things. And the main thing will be focused on the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What percentage of people have kids in this area? Are there a lot of children in the new development?
Yes, it is. I don't know the exact figure, but if I take my block for instance. There are 30% that don't have children. 70% have children. Okay. 30 don't. That's just one block, and that's typical of the entire development. Mm-hmm. The majority of people do have kids down here. You know, and we have the Southwick Community Center, which is it's just a block away from us.
I just drove by.
Yeah, that provides events and entertainment and activities for children. There's a large park adjacent to it, which is Russell Lee Park. And then we have the Duval Education Center, which provides daycare facilities, for the children. And then after school activities they provide. There's a Salvation Army Boys and Girls Club also incorporated into the education center up there. And they have a lot of events and things for children and whatnot. So we have a facilities for, and then the Algonquin Pool, I don't know if anybody's told you or not, the Algonquin Pool, which is approximately less than a half a mile away, the Algonquin Park is near the senior center of this development. The award came down almost 2 months ago. It was announced that there's a major renovation going into redoing the pool and everything over there for the community. So. That will be a facility that would, for the community, would be enjoyed by the community.
Right.
which is readily available.
And that's your public pool for this area.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Which is, it's not too far away.
Right. Any other than upkeep of properties, et cetera, any other issues that have really sort of occupied your time as in your involvement in the Neighborhood Council, sort of main issues in the community?
Well, the recurrent, let's say the recurrent issue is the retail. Mm-hmm. You know, what is being done as far as negotiating with bringing in some type of major retail. And, you know, that we, within the meetings that we have, that comes up just about, well, I would say at least every other meeting that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
On the lower scales, we have, even though we have to refer individuals to other avenues of recourse, people constantly come to the neighborhood meetings complaining about abandoned cars in different areas.
Mm.
You know, this, I don't know why we have that problem here, but you know, we have a police officer, a community resource officer, which attends our meetings, you know, on a regular basis, and we try to work with them very closely to keep them informed. And if we get complaints from the neighbors about abandoned cars, that's one of the big issues. And noise has been that's a complaint. So some of our older residents, I guess I don't have a problem, but I live down here on this end, so I don't have the problem that the people that live in the more congested area, you know, we don't have houses across the street from us, so we don't get that two-sided traffic type of deal.
Right.
But I've heard, you know, from what I've heard, that there's been a lot of complaints about noise issues at night, you know, people with loud music in their cars and things like that, having to call the police and whatnot like that.
Right. Right. How have the police relations been since you've been out?
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Maybe from your previous talks, you have, this area down here was the highest crime rate area in Louisville, mainly because of the low income situation that had been allowed to develop down here. But once they did away with that, and then you had people, property owners moving in and a new development, the crime rate dropped dramatically. And then with the major effort being put forth by the community and the police, that, you know, by community involvement by the police, that, you know, there has been a very good cooperation. You know, like I say, the community resource officer, he calls me from time to time just to find out if there's anything any problems that we're having, you know, which I find unusual.
Right.
So they call me to say if you're having any problems or not. So, no, it's been great. It's been great, just to answer your question.
Do they have a physical presence over here as far as a substation or anything?
Yes, yes. They're right next to the fire station, which is, you know, we have a fire station and we have a police station right in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For you personally, you know, having this involvement, has this made you consider getting involved in other things, or maybe a political run at some point?
Well, I wouldn't be truthful if I say I hadn't thought about it, but
yeah.
I don't entertain that idea to know. No, I don't. Politics is a dirty business. No, I don't entertain any ideas of going any further. No, no. This has been an experience. You know, it's been a learning experience for me and an enjoyable experience. But no, I think this is as far as I'll go.
Okay. I think you'd be very good at it. Well, any other any questions that I didn't ask that maybe I should have asked, or that you thought I might ask about your community here?
Well, I'm just going to make this one statement.
Yeah.
The Housing Authority, it has been brought to my attention, and I have observed that I don't feel like there was enough training put forth for homeowners. Mm. And I mean, they talked about it, but we haven't seen it on an ongoing basis or any type of effort to. I know you can't hold people's hands and put them in a home and expect them to do right. Maybe that's not what I don't know what I'm trying to say, but what's the best way to say it? The city fathers think this is a beautiful development, and I'm quite sure their efforts didn't go unappreciated, but they left a lot to be desired. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as what would happen to the area after they left. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. And hopefully with this new project that's coming about, which is Liberty Green, which is downtown now, that they have learned from this development, because this was their first one. Maybe they've learned they're going to have to teach people how to live in a new neighborhood, you know, when they do a project like this. Right. There has to be more efforts on somebody, you know, checking on what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, other than the neighborhood, because we didn't get our neighborhood association up off the ground until we had been here almost a year and a half before the efforts were started to get the neighbors involved.
Right.
You know, when we feel like it should have been from get-go, the first person that moved in, and then maybe handed on down, you know, something should have been done.
Right. So you felt like you had to step into that gap, and because it just wasn't being done.
Right. Right. Right.
So what kinds of, I mean, if you were in charge of Liberty Green, for example, what kinds of things would you put in place? Some sort of a permanent manager, or just create an association from the beginning, or training courses? What kinds of things would have been helpful?
Well, that, like I said, training courses, you know, training, I believe a property manager from the onset, you know, that, and strict guidelines and enforcement of strict guidelines. You know, here it was, what we saw was just, there was too many hands in the pot. Mm. One person says you can do this, one person says you can't do this. Well, let me say this real quickly, what I'm trying to get at. For us, is when we moved in, and then we wanted to have we couldn't have our garage built because of the setbacks of the electrical easements, the utility easements. You know, we purchased a lot before the utilities were installed. Mm. And our plans with our developer, our builder, was to have a house and a garage. And we purchased a lot which would accommodate all of that, which they told us. Well, then they come in with the utilities and have a setback, which pushed our house further back on the lot, so we had to go without the garage. Mm. And, you know, since we had already contracted with the developer to build our house, we decided, well, we'll do without the garage. And then we said, well, we'll put up a shed. Well, we were told that we needed to do this. We had rules and regulations to abide by about what type of shed, what it had to look like, and what we could do. So when we adhere to that, then we have another person comes along and tells us, no, you can't do this. You know, there were too many people telling us too many different things.
Right.
So it seemed like every time something was brought forth, then it was changed by someone else who came in. So, you know, I don't know. It felt like we were an experiment. And, you know, that's the feeling that we got. There was just too many changes to what we were initially told, as opposed to what actually could be done. And now we're seeing that, you know, like, for instance, if you had a shed put up, you had to have it on a concrete base. Now I'm seeing throughout the subdivision sheds sitting on blocks, on dirt, because different people are in charge now. So things have changed. You know, you can have certain types of houses. I'm seeing all kind of different houses, you know, but, you know, just we need a solid format you know, to start out with and try to stay with that pattern as you go along, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, there were just too many changes to start with, and a lot of people got despondent about that because, well, they told me I couldn't do that, and now they're doing that. You know, these are the type of issues that you find out.
Right. So, yeah. Some sort of consistency has been missing.
Yes. That is, and that what threw people in a bad mindset about what was going on.
That's completely understandable. Yeah. Have things improved, or is it still? Does it still seem like it's being worked out?
As far as the consistency down here, because the development is so large and almost in a build-out phase, we don't get that anymore. Because people have just accepted that that's just norm for the course, you know, and the people that are coming in now, well, I'll give you an example of the people that are building in now in the three streets over here that are being built. When the developer came in and started building homes, they set the mailbox behind the sidewalk. Then somebody come along and told them, someone from the managing forces told them that the mailboxes had to be at the curve. Well, no, when the mailman stopped delivering the mail to these people, they told them that your mailbox is supposed to be at the curve. Mm-hmm. Well, if you go through the subdivision, all of our mailboxes set behind the sidewalk, when in essence, they were supposed to be at the curve.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when these people that the recently, the of the last year or so, when the mailman stopped delivering these people's mail because their mailboxes were behind the curve, then they come back along and somebody paid for them to move them out. No, the property owners had to pay to move their mailboxes out.
The property owners had to bear that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Because within the development, the design phase, the mailboxes were supposed to be at the curve.
But they weren't done that.
No,
way.
They weren't done that way.
That's a pretty serious snafu.
Yeah. And then on one of the Williams Weathersby up here, which is one of the main thoroughfares from the senior center off of Wilson Avenue, the sidewalks were too close to the curve for the vegetation, for the mm-hmm. greenery to
right.
be planted.
Right.
So somebody had to come back and move the sidewalk back, and you know there was a big snafu about that. So
right.
you know, I guess. Whoever designed it, you know, these are just inconsistencies that have happened, you know.
Yeah, they're frustrating.
Yeah.
But it is the city, and it is new, and yeah, you could see where. It was.
Yeah, and one last thing, we had an issue from some of the rental units over off of 34th Street. There was a vacant lots in behind these rental units that has yet to be developed, which is at the end of Duval Street, 34th and Duval. There's a large empty lot. Well, the contractors from all around the development was using that lot to dump rock and dirt and different things on, because as they build basements and they grade, bring lots down to grade, they have excess, they take it over there and dump it. Well, the children started using that area as a playground or a place to play. They cleaned it where they could climb up dirt and take their dirt bikes and go up these mounds of dirt. But some of the kids got to throwing rocks and hitting people's cars, parked cars and whatnot. So the residents started complaining. And it took a good 4.5 months of shuffling back and forth between TCB, the real estate development company, the community development bank, the city, to find out who was responsible for maintaining that area to get it cleaned up.
Right.
So that we could eliminate this problem of kids using it to, you know, throw rocks and damage people's property.
Mm-hmm.
But it was frustrating to the property owners around there, because they go to one person, they say, well, it's not our responsibility.
Right.
They go to another organization, they say, you know, it's not our responsibility. So, you know, we even got the police involved in it, and they helped us find out, targeted to who was responsible for it and to get the area cleaned up. But, you know, which should have been a real simple thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if TCB is managing the property, the Louisville Real Estate Development is responsible for the lots, then we shouldn't have had to talk to all these different people just to get one simple little thing done. But, you know, that's just one example of, you know, it's not my responsibility, mm-hmm. you know.
So does it, in terms of the Metro Housing Authority then, does it sort of feel like they came in and got this started and then really disappeared, or are they still, is there still a working relationship or responsibility that they still have?
I believe Metro Housing only works with the homeowners association, and see the neighborhood, and that's another thing. This is a fragmented community when it comes to organizations, which I don't think should have been done. You have a renters association, you have a homeowners association, and then you have a neighborhood association, and.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize.
And it was created by the
and you're the neighborhood association.
We're the neighborhood association, right. All right. So you have these fragmented organizations, and we've tried to work within each other, you know, work together, but you know, the renters association, which is ran by the community builders, we have yet to work together.
Okay.
And see that. So, you know, Metro Housing, to directly answer your question, Metro Housing works closely with the Homeowners Association, because there's a lot of, there's Homeowners Association fees to be collected, and different monies to be, you know, distributed out for maintaining the community. So I think they still work together, but, you know, the Neighborhood Association, we don't have any dealings with the Metro Housing.
Okay. Do you see the potential then for the Neighborhood Association to sort of be the umbrella, or?
That is the goal.
That's the goal.
That's the goal, you know, but it's until, we'll see, TCB is a, I'll use the word barrier, between the renter association working with the Neighborhood Association. Because, you know, they have their idea, we have our own association, so why should we, you know, work with you all, you know, that nobody said that, but you know, when we send out flyers for meetings and things, we don't get any response from those people. The people say, well, we've got our own meeting we go to, you know, we don't need to go to you all. So, you know, that's one of the, there's so many, like I say, so many fragmented organizations down here that, you know, that is a, we're not working together,
right?
You know? And with maybe down the road we can work this problem
right.
out, you know. So it's going to take a long time to work it out.
But it sounds like your vision is one of a united larger community of renters and homeowners, etc.
Right, but right. That's our vision.
Yeah, but there are barriers at the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Everybody has their own agenda.
Well, I wish you luck.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to add before
no,
I cut this out?
That's it.
Great.
That's
great. Thank you very much. I really appreciate
your time.
You're welcome.